Committee on Transportation and Economic Development to order. Senator Hannan is ill today, so he's asked me to fill in for him. We need to go fast if we can for the reason that I think we have a caucus.
At 9:45, we have a caucus.
And we have some things here that I think most of you are familiar with. So let's move first to House Bill 5026, Health-Related Licensing Board. Christy, if you would give us a rundown of what we're going to do there.
Yes, sir. My name is Christy Nickram, Legislative Fiscal Office. House Bills 5026 and 5027 have been referred back to the subcommittee for reconsideration. House Bill 5027, which is the fee bill for the Health-Related Licensing Board, there are two issues for you to consider. One is to remove the Board of Radiologic Technology because of some concerns of members, legislators. And the other issue for 5027 is that in January, the Board of Psychologist Examiners budget went through the Human Resources Subcommittee, and the budget was discussed and passed, and it is also passed both the House and the Senate. One of its packages was an increase in national examination fees of $100, from $250 to $350. This is one of the pass-through type of examination fees. The fee started this month, and therefore it should have been in 5027. And so I've handed out proposed amendments which would add this board to the fee bill, and the other amendment would be to remove the Board of Radiologic Technology. 5026, there's one amendment, and that is to remove the Board of Radiologic Technology. And I've also attached a copy of a letter from Senator Chuta, chair of the Human Resources Subcommittee, to Senator Hannan explaining what happened with the Board of Psychologist Examiners.
Okay, with that, we're moved to work session on House Bill 5026.
Mr.
We have one amendment.
I would move the -2 amendment to House Bill 5026.
Okay, Senator Q-Tub has moved the -2 amendments to House Bill 5026. Any discussion? Yes,
what
Senator.
What is the reason for the removal of this board? I forgot.
The reason for the removal of the board, there's a problem, and I believe this is Co-Chair Leslie Lewis has spoken about the problem with the dramatic increase in fees and so forth, so we wanted to take it out and put the bill out totally except for this, which will come up later, I believe.
Okay.
That's better put.
Yeah. Well, no, we did start. I just wanted to parenthesis.
Okay, are there any no votes on this amendment? Hearing none and seeing none, 5026 is
the amendment,
with 5026-2.
And Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 5026-2 to the full committee with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Senator Cusack. Are there any no votes? Discussion? No votes. It will be moved to the full committee, House Bill 5026.
I like how the staff works.
Yeah, choreography is good. We like your fine cooperation. House Bill 5027, Health-Related Licensing Board. This is the fees side. Christy, I guess you more or less explained it earlier.
Yes, I did. There are two amendments to this bill. One is to remove the Board of Radiologic Technology, and the other is to insert the State Board of Psychologist Examiners written examination fee for $350.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I would move the dash 2 amendment to House Bill 5027.
Okay, any questions in regards to that? How does this do both of those purposes? Just one. I guess you should take them both.
Both amendments.
Both amendments. Okay.
They're both on the same dash 2.
Yeah,
okay, fine. Is everybody in agreement with that? Okay, the amendments have passed to House Bill 5027.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 5027-2 to the full committee with the due pass recommendation.
Okay. House Bill 5027 has been moved to the full committee as amended. Ready? No votes? Passed. Okay.
Mr. Chair, you got a promise that Senator Hannon won't come in tomorrow and do everything we just did this morning. Then they're done.
We hope that won't happen. I don't think so. Okay. Next, carriers. One is, both are House bills, so on the House side, how about Schroeder?
Sure.
And on the Senate side, Senator Cusup.
Okay.
And full committee, Senator Kito. Okay. Next item up is the Employment Department, Senate Bill 5512. John Britton.
Thank you.
Gee, this is fun.
Isn't it? I like it too. Reduce the membership. Do what?
You only eat will be a half hour away. She may miss the meal.
No, she won't.
Maybe. You see our write-up?
Good morning, John.
Good morning. Got a write-up in
the
Big park.
Okay, John.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Let me know what's going on. Senate Bill 5512 and everybody else. Yes, they already know.
Senate Bill 5512 is the Employment Department's budget bill. In an effort to be brief, I have given each of you a copy of a couple of things that we intend to recommend this morning. I have given you sort of a cover memo with a numbered list of things that I would like to cover with you this morning. The second page is a summary of the total agency budget. There's a fair amount of detail there, but if we want to go into even more detail, we can do that. I have another handout. And finally, a draft budget note, which is one of the items I'd like to cover with you.
Okay.
So,
can I ask a question to the committee? Now, what stage are you in here? Is everybody basically as far as where we are in regards to this bill, as far as work sessions? Are we going to work
sessions? Ready to go to work session.
Everybody ready to go to work session? Okay, with that, we're go to work session on Senate Bill 5512 and continue.
Sure thing. Let's look, first of all, at the second page, which is the budget detail. And what I would like to do this morning with you is to walk through the lines that are below the governor's recommended budget line. It's the third shaded line on this sheet of paper, general fund of 4642172. That's the line I'd like to begin with. That is the governor's recommended budget. Total funds of about $1.3 billion, positions 1,498, FTE 1,426.51. And then I'd like to walk you through these LFO recommendations this morning. The first one is a technical adjustment, which would add a certificate of participation payment. This was inadvertently left out of the governor's recommended budget. It relates to a $2.5 million purchase of the Employment Department's Eugene office. And I might point out as well that the $2.5 million is not in this budget bill. It's not in Senate Bill 5512. It will be in a capital budgeting bill that contains all of the capital purchases that will be made. In any case, this is the certificate of participation, both the principal and interest payment for the upcoming biennium on that purchase of the Eugene office.
Well, if the building is not approved, then the amount is going to be taken off at the end of the session?
I think, Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, that's a reasonable question. I think my assumption in putting this in here is that the purchase would be approved, but you raise a good point. If it was not for some reason approved, we would have, according to my recommendation, excess limitation here.
But it could be changed in the capital construction.
Yes, it could. Yes, it could.
Mm-hmm. Another question. So the building will be paid by what money?
It'll be paid by a combination of money, as I understand it. Some of it are federal dollars instituted through legislation called the REED Act, and the other part of it, as I understand it, are certificates of participation, which is what is reflected here, the payments of principal and interest.
Mr. Chairman, another question. So it'll be paid by certificate of participation, but what money is it? General fund? Is it fees collected from employers?
Mr. Chair and Senator Yee, let me turn to the Employment Department for that answer. The question, as I see it, Senator Yee, is what source of the other funds is that? Let's find out.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cosway, Director of Employment Department, this is my budget manager, Tracy Loudon, and I believe those are penalty and interest dollars.
Just for the record, my name is Tracy Loudon. I'm the budget manager of the Employment Department. The purchase for $2.5 million is a combination of certificates of participation and federal REED Act dollars. The repayment on certificates of participation debt, which is the technical adjustment we're asking for $295,000, is going to be penalty and interest dollars.
Penalty and interest dollars. So interest on penalty payment by the employers.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. When employers do not pay their unemployment insurance tax on time, there are penalties and interest assessed on that, and those dollars are going to be used, at least some portion of those, for the repayment of a fund that the federal government has to purchase the buildings and different types of property called REED Act. And we actually pay those back interest-free with some funding source, and in this case it would be the penalty and interest.
Another question.
Three.
So if a lot of them are not penalized as predicted, then you won't get the interest on the penalty payment.
Mr. Chair and Senator Yee, that is correct. However, we have a pretty good baseline about how many employers generally don't pay on time. We have had this in our budget for many, many years, and so there's a range that a number of people do not pay, and that we stay within that range of projection.
What do you usually do with interest payment, if not for the building?
Senator Yee, members of the committee, typically the penalty and interest funds for the department run a little over $6 million per biennium. Those in the past have been used for debt service that we have had on our employment department information network, which is the kiosks you see around the state, to pay for those things. We also do use it for some of the employment service programs that the department has that they've brought to the legislature for approval.
So if you have $6 million each biennium, so you can pay the whole thing off. You can pay the $2.5 million building off. Why do you want a participation of the
Senator Yee, Mr. Chairman, the penalty and interest funds that are included in our budget are already dedicated to a number of other areas within our programs that you have approved in the past and continue in our base budget. So the amount of funds available this time is restricted to the amount that we have for debt service.
And you can provide a list of what the $6 million paid for besides the...
Okay, if you do that for Senator Yee. Anybody else want that information?
No.
I don't need the information. I just had a question for Mr. Britton.
Okay. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Britton, relative to the certificate of participation on this building, normally we would have been offsetting rent through the certificate of participation, and that would be a source of the certificate itself. Has that been adjusted for and accounted for under the cost of goods and services under the current service level?
My understanding is that it has, Representative Butler. Yes. There's been a reduction in rent, assuming the purchase of the Eugene office.
Could you please confirm that for us, if you would, please?
Yes, sir.
And satisfy yourself that that, in fact, is the case, because okay. Normally the certificate of participation would be in place of rent that we would already be paying on such a facility or similar to the rent.
This is in addition to the rent, this payment.
That's what Ms. Brent will find out, that it probably it should have already been taken out of the roll-up in the current service level. I just want to confirm that.
Okay.
Mr. Chair and Representative Butler, can we confirm that
right
now?
Yes.
Yeah. We're in a work session. We'd like to get this done.
Mr. Chair and Representative Butler, we actually did do a spreadsheet on the types of income that we have and also the outgo. And I'm going to ask Tracy to walk through the basic assumptions on that. But there is a tenant, for example, in the building right now. The Internal Revenue Service is a tenant. They would remain as a tenant until we would be getting some kind of rental income as well as the penalty interest. But we did do a spreadsheet that actually does adjust, and we did not ask for more than what we need. I'll have him walk through those.
Representative Butler, Mr. Chairman, the inflow and outflow for this time is we are attempting to continue the same level of expenditures in order to amortize the loan. If in 6 years from now that we start seeing a reduction of expenses for the department. And so when we originally go in, there are some tenant improvements that we will be making. Some of that has to do with the new Workforce Investment Act and the one-stop. The Eugene office building, one of the reasons we're interested in purchasing that is it has been designated as a one-stop location. And so there is not, in 1999 to 2001, a reduction in expenditures that is very significant. But in 2001, 2003, we would see that kind of reduction.
And Mr. Chair, I'm Representative Butler, I didn't make copies, so I didn't know I was going to be asked that question again, but I could have staff make copies, and it's the cash flow that we project that we would need with this kind of purchase.
And Mr. Chairman, I have to follow up. And the cash flow does project the fact that the rent that has previously been expended in that particular location will be accounted for as a reduction when we add back the certificates of participation.
Yes, the Representative Butler, members of the committee, Mr. Chairman, the rent we see that will be coming in next biennium is $550,500.
Thank you very much. That's very well said. Thank you. Okay, John?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
So if they ever have $550,000 rent payment, and they don't need to show the payment for COP, because they're going to use the rent to pay for the COP.
Mr. Chair, if I might be able to respond to that, I think perhaps the $550,000 to which Ms. Crosby was referring to has already been picked up as a resource, and I think she confirmed that it has already been accounted for as a resource, and so it's in our resources, it's already in our cash,
and rather than expend the cash out, we've got the budget for the $285,790 of certificates of participation, and their comment is it's coming out of the resource of money, which is part of the interest and principal and penalties monies that are being collected. I guess that's probably a logical place for it, but it's all in. Even the federal monies are in the resource up above, and so I'm satisfied that certificates of participation is the appropriate way to go ahead and add the structure, particularly where it's a one-stop location. I think that's probably the concept that we need to try and enhance as much as we possibly can. And I think that by using certificates of participation and buying our own facility, because it is a unique approach, is probably the way to handle it. But I guess what I'm trying to say, Senator Yee, is I believe that the up above in the income resources, the $550,000 is already there. Okay. Thank you.
And they pay $285,000 for a participation certificate of participation. So does that mean they save $285,000?
I think.
Are you buying them?
And maybe
Mr. Chair and Senator Yee, I think that what the agency was saying was that we may not see significant savings in the current or the upcoming biennium,
mm-hmm.
but out in the future we will see rent savings because they own the building and because they're getting tenant income.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Hey, John?
The second line is a general fund reduction. This is more than the 4% that we have been instructed to look for, significantly more. It's about 15%, I believe. This is a general fund reduction in the local workforce committees. There are 15 of them around the state, and this money was proposed to help with the funding of staff for those committees. And it is the opinion of the co-chairs and my recommendation that we eliminate that program. These regional workforce committees have, some of them have other sources of funding. That those other sources vary depending on the other local agencies and organizations that are involved with these committees. The next item here.
Any questions on that? Okay, who's the next?
Is the elimination of package 101. This was a dependent upon some legislation, either Senate Bill 982 or House Bill 2245, that would have added more persons, namely some types of agricultural workers, to the unemployment insurance rolls. And this was funding for staff persons to help in the assistance of unemployment insurance benefits for those persons. The issue here is that the agency, the Employment Department, does not believe that either one of these bills, either Senate Bill 982 or House Bill 2245, will pass. Therefore, we're eliminating it. I have a side note here that if one of them does make it out of the substantive committee and in the joint ways and means, we can add appropriation if necessary. The elimination of packages 160 and 161, the next several two lines here are similar. This has to do with the central hearings unit that was put in place by the governor. But it does require House Bill 2525 to pass. And again, if that bill makes it out of committee and gets referred to Joint Ways and Means, we can add that expenditure limitation back in and the position authority if we're close to getting that bill through. But in the meantime, again, we're trying to stick with current law, and that's what we've done here. The next line here is eliminate
the jobs plus package 415. This was a package that would add 7 FTE as recruiters for jobs plus employers. My recommendation is to eliminate that for a couple of reasons. One is that, as you heard testimony on, the Jobs Plus Diversion Fund, which was created several biennia ago, is expected to be depleted either at the end of the upcoming biennium or the beginning of the following biennium. So I have some questions about expanding the program given that fact. There are some policy issues related to the program itself. We had some reports provided that showed that we're not getting the same amount of money that we're investing. For every dollar that we invest, we're getting less than a dollar as far as benefits back. That raised some questions, at least for me, on the Jobs Plus program. Finally, another issue was raised having to do with the fact that maybe it's better to spend the money on the program itself as opposed to staffing to ramp up the program even more. But this is an issue that the legislature will need to wrestle with. We have talked to the Employment Department about it, and we are further recommending that in the budget report that we write with DAS's help, that we can say that the Employment Department can come in and request these funds. There is funding for this expansion and enhancement of the program, but they could come back into the Emergency Board and request those funds if we have a little more congealing around job scope policy during the current session. The next line, I'll go on, Mr. Chair, if it's
sure.
Okay.
Doing good. No questions?
Okay. Is to unschedule package 419 pending legislation. 419 is a child care package. There were three child care packages, two of which would add regulation to the child care division, its responsibilities. This one, we are saying, why don't we unschedule the funding here? It's about $971,000 pending passage of Senate Bill 109 or House Bill 2241. And in discussions with the Employment Department, they are of the opinion that at least House Bill 2241 has a reasonable chance of getting out of committee and passing through this legislature.
Mr. Chairman,
three.
Is this federal money?
Yes, it is.
So are we certain about the money the federal government is going to appropriate at this point?
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, I'm smiling because we're never certain about what the federal government is going to appropriate, but this is our best estimate as to what will be appropriated during the next 5 years.
I think that's another reason to unschedule until we know what the amount is and the bill is passed.
Hey, somewhat the same concern that Senator Yee had. I didn't want us to get into a situation, unfortunately, if the program's a good idea, it's hard to afford everything here, we're doing some other great child care things. I just didn't want to get to where, okay, we start something, and even if the federal dollars are here this biennium, the long-term picture was very sketchy compared to some of the other child care programs that were in the budget. And so I'm a little worried that once we get something started, it's tough to undo, and then it becomes a state obligation, and all of a sudden it's kind of an unfunded mandate on the state. The other little concern I had, Ronald is a little concern, it's a big concern, is that by just inspecting these facilities one time, that we end up in a situation where we get some false assurances to the public that, oh, they've been government inspected, therefore they're great, and that, you know, this initial pre-inspection is all it is. It's not an ongoing process. Because 90% of the child care providers are these types of businesses. So I'm worried. You know, it costs us X dollars to already do the certification for the group homes and the child care centers, and here we have the family ones. we get it, which are 90% of the providers out there, we'd be in for some big costs. So I'm strongly in favor of unscheduling. And I guess the question I'd ask John and maybe the chair is, you know, if the money, if we unschedule, are there some parameters we need to put around this to make sure we don't obligate ourselves to the future that get ourselves in trouble, rather than just maybe not fund this particular package?
Mr. Chair, Representative Schrader, let me ask if Mr. Chair, with your permission, Verena could come up. My understanding is that one or both of the child care regulation packages were with limited duration positions. I'm not entirely positive of that, but...
Mr. Chair and Mr. Britton and also Representative Schrader, your questions are very well taken, and in fact, because of some of the issues that you raised, we actually asked for these packages to be limited duration. The federal government is putting more and more child care dollars down to states with strings attached. We know what those are projected, but we don't know what they will be in the future. We had our own concerns and issues about making it a permanent program. What we would very much recommend and comes with our budget is that they just go in as a limited duration. We talk in the overview of our budget about them being more of a pilot project, and the pilot would be basically in the budget bill because we would have to return if this was successful, if we wanted to continue it, or if we could continue it because there were federal funds attached to it, that we could bring that back in a budget discussion next time because the limited duration positions would go away. To Representative Schrader's issue about the types of reviews and when those would be reviewed, there's actually two issues that are pending in front of the legislature. The budget package that we are talking about now would actually be a single review, primarily because that's how many dollars we had available. There is a bill, Senate Bill 109, I believe it is, that is a larger bill that would require more types of inspections for more people, and that's about $1 million more price tag, of which we don't have available revenue for. So certainly that's within the purview of this discussion, and that bill has passed out and is in Ways and Means for review as well.
Thank you. Further questions?
Just a quick comment, sir. I appreciate the fund department's good work on this in the limited duration, and just, I don't know if it's appropriate, but make sure that in the narrative for the next group that follows in our footsteps, something about how this is a pilot program and will depend on future federal funding so that the next legislature can make the decision they need to make.
Good idea. We'll do that. Okay. John?
The final two lines, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, are small general fund reductions. The first is a reduced attorney general cost. This goes down from the $92 an hour down to the $90 an hour. And finally, a vacancy holdback, which looks at these child care positions and assumes some delay in hiring new certifiers and so on. This would be, according to my recommendation, a total of $11,177 pulled back in the as a special reserve within the emergency fund.
Okay.
Now, there are a couple of other items I wanted to go over with you. Back on the first page, looks like number six, a budget note. I've attached a copy of the draft budget note. This is a budget note that the department requested be included in the budget report. It is similar to what has been in for several biennia past, and the Employment Department and the Department of Administrative Services have reviewed this budget note and believe that it's okay.
Can I just ask a question on that?
Yeah.
How is that accounted for in their budget document? Is that vacancies that they then allocate in case they need to be filled, or?
Well, let me get to that in a second. This, you know, when the Employment Department presented me with this request, I said, well, you can do this without any kind of budget notes. You could set aside $1 million to meet unexpected workload. And their response was, and I'm smiling, was, well, we just want to be sure that when we have $1 million, if we do, left over in our budget, that some fiscal analyst doesn't just take it. And I said, well, you don't trust me, but they assured me that they did. This is to accommodate their needs. Now, let me respond further to your question, Representative Schrader, because Senator Yee asked me this as well. There are currently vacancies in the unemployment insurance program. The reason for that is that unemployment has not risen to the levels where the employment department has needed to hire people to accommodate those claim requests. However, it is assumed in the 9901 budget that, for example, we will have a softening of the economy to the degree that we will a state law kicking in additional benefits will come into play, and they will need to hire more persons. So they have position authority. They can respond quickly to shift in unemployment rates, and if this additional benefits phrase within state law kicks in, they can respond quickly to that as well. But we're giving them some flexibility, I guess is the way I would put it. And I would note that one of the reasons they have the vacancies during the current biennium is they have not hired people to meet an increasing caseload in the UI program because it simply doesn't exist. So they haven't used those positions in other ways.
Can I ask a follow-up?
Yeah.
Again, being fairly new to the process. So if they had vacancies this last biennium, then the dollars weren't extended for that, I assume, and they were then, and when the OFO was going through the budget, you kind of pull those out and then put them back in, or does it become part of the current service level roll-up?
It did become part of the current service level roll-up. Now, there was a vacancy. Vacancies were taken into consideration. Again, another way to do this, but it is more cumbersome and it does not allow them the flexibility that they feel they need, is to cut the position authority along with expenditure limitations and have them come to the emergency board to request positions and expenditure limitations. But as they pointed out to me, that is a cumbersome process. They have to respond quickly when they see upturns in UI workload. So we're trying to accommodate, allow them the management capability to do that.
Just the last comment, I'm sorry, I should have done this in previous session, but trying to get a handle on it. Apparently, then, the number of vacancies they have now are not enough for what they anticipate the need will be in 9901. And then, just a note, or just a comment in the future, and I do remember looking at this during, our public hearing process, but it seemed like that when the economy was good, we kind of needed maybe some new people just in case it got bad, and when the economy was bad, we definitely needed new people. I was kind of wondering a little bit under what circumstance, you never needed any new people, and just a little concern about that, and perhaps next time I'd be interested if I'm here.
Well, let me respond to that, Administrator. I cited one factor as to why the UI benefits, the non-limited funds, are going up, and that is that additional benefits, the state law providing for additional benefits, has kicked in. But keep in mind as well that the labor force itself is growing. So even if the unemployment rate remains the same, didn't change at all, the fact that we've got a larger labor force means that we're going to have more claims. So that's another reason that there's an addition to the UI workforce here.
I have a question.
Sorry.
Mr. Chairman. So I remember during budget hearing, we were informed they have about 40 vacancies. And this is to allow them to have the flexibility to increase employment in case there are high rising unemployment rates. But holding back this 1 million, what is 40 vacancies equal
equivalent to in terms of dollars?
Mr. Chair and Senator Yee, I may have wrongly connected these two issues. The $1 million is really to allow them to operate when there are delays. This is one of the things, delays in federal reimbursement. Sometimes the budget doesn't pass, the federal budget doesn't pass quickly. This gives them a little bit of operating expenditure limitation and funding in the event that that happens. And we do have in the budget note unanticipated workload increases. But again, it's a contingency fund within their existing limitation, within the limitation that is spelled out in their budget. They are not asking for another $1 million.
Oh, so, Mr. Chairman, so the money is in the budget
to allow them
to fill the basic income, and this is only for delays in federal reimbursement.
Right.
So, I see. So they don't have to come to emergency board if they have to hire more people.
Mr. Chair, Senator, that's my understanding. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Are we going to be informed in case they have to hire that 40 positions? Are they going to inform the e-board that they are using those vacancies? Because that means a lot of people in response to high unemployment. Are they going to report to the e-board, or is there any way we can be informed?
Mr. Chair and Senator Yee, that brings me to my point number 7 on the front page. You and I have talked about this a little bit, and that was a possible report to the emergency board in the event that we see rises in unemployment that would kick in additional benefits. And I've talked to the employment department, and they're happy to report to the emergency board in the event that we see a real softening in the economy and we see a ramp up in their workload. They would, I think, welcome the opportunity to come and talk to the emergency board, and emergency board members may have questions about the effect that unemployment is having and how they are responding. So we can put that in the budget report, and if that will accommodate.
Well, is that all right with the committee?
Sure.
That we require that? Okay. Add that to the amendments of Representative Patrick.
At some point, we've had a discussion. Maybe we're talking about this now, about the 41 positions. It would have been their mandated caseload package 41 about those. Whether did e-board eliminate those as being limited duration positions? We had talked about keeping them as limited duration positions at some point, is what I thought during our discussion. And your recommendation is the elimination of those. So why don't you bring up the speed?
Sure, that's fine. Mr. Chair and Representative Patridge, what we have here, if you go to the second sheet with all the budget details, at the top, toward the top of the page, you can see administrative and a biennialized e-board, and there is an elimination of 41 positions, 35.56 FTEs. This is not related to the unemployment insurance program. It is the elimination of limited duration positions, primarily those that are used in fulfilling contracts with other state agencies. So it's not, it doesn't have to do with unemployment insurance. Notice, by the way, that they are added back in down by the governor's reductions and enhancements to CFL. This is right below the second shaded line. The Promote Employment Program adds about 33. There's a total of 46 positions. Contract positions are 33. And these are limited durations. They're limited duration for the reason that these contracts expire every biennium and are typically renewed, but that's what the source of that elimination is. The e-board has not eliminated positions from this budget.
So are we keeping those with limited duration positions in your argument?
Mr. Chair and Representative Passage, we are. Yes.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure.
Yes.
Okay.
I just had one question relative to the overall modification of have the and the recommendations of the Legislative Fiscal Office related to the jobs plus portion that is modified here. And fortunately, we have Senator Qtub with us, and she probably is the person in the building that could most easily respond to this. In the process of eliminating part of the jobs plus packages and so forth, will that affect our TANF funds and any other of the welfare funds that may come with those?
John would be a better one to answer that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, I've also been assigned to the Adult and Family Services budget, so I'm familiar somewhat with the TANF. This should probably not affect the placements in Jobs Plus that they make. I mean, it may to some degree, but I don't think it will significantly. One of the things that the Employment Department pointed out to us was that AFS Jobs Plus placements have been going down, and unemployment insurance placements in Jobs Plus have been going up over recent times. The primary reason that the TANF placements have been going down is that TANF caseload as a whole has dropped significantly. So there are not as many persons to put, but to say that it wouldn't affect the amount of placements is not quite accurate on my part. Obviously, if we did expand the program, there would be more available slots to put people in.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chair, I did ask the right person, and she sent it to the right staff person.
Thank you. Representative Butler, any further questions? Further questions? Okay, we will, I will entertain a motion to approve Senate Bill 55.
I just want to make a statement, if I could. And it probably doesn't coincide very close with what we're doing right here, but it does. It does have to do with the Employment Department and testimony that we heard yesterday, and I just want to say this so the Employment Department can make sure that all efforts are coordinated there. We heard yesterday in the Subcommittee of Human Resources from the Vocational Rehabilitation Division a wonderful group of individuals coming forward with various disabilities and still having the desire to go to work. I just want to make sure that if and when somebody who would be eligible for the vocational rehabilitation program that maybe on the surface doesn't necessarily appear to, and we did hear testimony that somebody went to the Employment Department, but it was on his second or third time that he was told probably vocational rehabilitation could help him. If we would make everybody in the Employment Division aware of vocational rehabilitation, what they can do for individuals that are difficult to employ, and if more people in this Employment Division know that, the sooner we can help these other individuals who, believe me, climb a mountain every day. And I was just very impressed, both with that division and the fact that these individuals really want to work. But I thought any coordination that can take place between the two divisions here would really be an asset to our state.
Good point. Good point. For shaking your head.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. John, you were... The report.
I have one other point on the memo, and I've already talked about that. The $2.5 million purchase of the Eugene office is not in Senate Bill 5512. It is in the capital budgeting bill, and
right.
It's considered there.
Right.
And that concludes what I have to say.
Okay.
What's the bill number on capital?
I will have to find that out. I don't know.
We'll take me know. Okay. Representative Butler?
While we have John on the hot seat here and making sure that I understand two issues. One, the Wagner-Pfizer, I believe there are funds that those are for the one-stop programs, and this is just one of the one-stop programs that we're developing. It starts in Eugene area. Is that correct?
Representative Butler and members of the committee, the one-stop program, there is a one-stop grant that is separate from Wagner-Pfizer, And this is a program that has been going on for at least several years, I'm aware of. And it's all across the state. So Eugene is but one of those designated points for one stop.
Okay, and this building is being specifically dedicated to a one stop arrangement that's being constructed that we're using the fuel fees on.
Representative Butler, that's my understanding from what they testified. Yes, please.
Mr. Chair and Representative Butler, Wagner Pfizer funds are primarily for employment services. It's actually called the Employment Service Program, and it is going to be part of the programs that will be administered through the one-stop system. The actual building is one that we're already in, and the partners have and in that local area has designated it as a one-stop site, and there will be people that will be moving in to provide their services, as well as our people will be providing both the unemployment insurance and employment services.
Okay, and then just a final follow-up relative to the whole issue of the employment workforces and so forth that we talked about. And again, we have Senator Kutub with us, where a portion of this may eventually vest. And she's got her capable legislative fiscal officer with her today, too. So the Workforce Investment Act of 1998 will be administered in part through, it's my understanding, in part through the human resources. Are there ongoing negotiations and discussions? I think there's a bill where that, where the workforce investment will actually be funded as a part, as where the jobs, JTPA, the Jobs Training Partnership Act starts to phase out, and the Workforce Investment Act of 1998 moves in. I know that the Employment Department has had a greater role in the Jobs Training Partnership Act in some respects, but my understanding is that more of that WIA money will now be moved to human resources and will be made available. I think that the WIA bill that's out there right now nominates the Adult and Family Services, in my recollection.
I don't know.
Representative Patrick, Director Parsley.
Mr. Chair, the bill I believe that Representative Butler is talking about is House Bill 3203. That is certainly under discussion, and there's various versions. I think they're on -6 amendments. It has not moved out of committee. There's a number of programs, including JTPA and Employment Department's programs, that would be affected. I might add that we all work very collaboratively right now in this budget that you're looking at. There are contracts with Adult and Family Services to do placement, certainly true of the voc rehabilitation dollars also, and that is, those are programs that are required under the Federal Workforce Investment Act to be coordinated through a one-stop environment. So those programs will be discussed as part of that bill, correct?
If there's any effect later on, that will be done in legislation. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Not in my,
okay. Could I entertain a motion, please, to approve this?
Mr. Chair, I would move the LFO recommendations that John has just gone through and to the full committee with the due pass recommendation. I don't know what, as well as the budget note as amended. Do you want me to do this? You want me to say this? The
amount in the record.
General fund, the recommendation in general fund of $3,911,395. Other funds of $780,954. Federal funds of $144,539,889. And the non-limited of $1,071,217,037 for total funds of $1,275,449,275. Positions are 1,398.
And that would be an FTE of 1,326.71 employees.
Great, thank you.
And the emergency fund reserve of $11,177 for AGH change rate in agency. Is there anything else we want to mention?
Including that, John?
You've mentioned the budget notes.
Yeah. And we don't need to, that's all we do.
We have the additional budget note in the work session.
There was an amended budget note, which I don't know, I didn't write it down. Was Representative Schrader the one that suggested the amendment to the budget note?
This was.
Well, I don't know if it was an amendment, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure we were amending the budget note.
Okay, that's right.
And Senator, if you have a representative Schrader, that pertains to them reporting if there was a change in unemployment. Is that what you
There were two statements. Okay. One was a narrative discussion a little bit on 419, beginning with the pilot, and that's the subject of several times. And the second was Senator Yee's and mine, I guess, too, about the workload report to the E-Board in general, to the vacancies to make sure.
And let me clarify the latter one, Representative Schrader and Senator Yee. Do you want them to report if there is if additional benefits kick in, if that's the law that kicks in, or what triggers a report? I want to be clear on that.
When the 40, Mr. Chairman, when the 40 vacancies are used to respond to high unemployment areas needing more benefits.
Mr. Chair, with your permission, is that clear? I'm asking the Employment Department, and they're saying yes.
Mm-hmm.
So they are clear on what that means.
Okay.
Okay, does everyone understand the motion? The motion is to approve the
council's
bottom amount. Okay, are there any no votes? Are there any no votes? Hearing none, and seeing none, it has passed. Carrier Senate Bill 5512 will be
because I voted yes.
Yeah, we don't get you to carry many.
Oh,
yeah, she's on the floor. So we're all right. Okay, thank you, John. That was excellent. What a great committee. I like this committee. You guys get so
over. You're making up for yesterday.
Nicely. Okay, I believe we have up next the House Bill 5053, the Oregon Department of Transportation.
We have 10 minutes.
And we have 10 minutes. Wait. Let's do aeronautics. That way we'll be able to get something done. We have 10 minutes.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Okay, we're ready to go here.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Grace Cronington, Director of the Oregon Department of Transportation, and with me is Anna Cook, who's the acting manager of the aeronautics team.
Thank you. Good morning. I would like to briefly go through our programs. Aeronautics is a simple department. We own and operate 31 airports in the state. We've got a staff of 16 FTEs that manage programs including managing our airports, which is property management and maintenance and construction on those airports. We also do land use planning and system planning statewide. We inspect and license and register the other 400 public and private use airports in the state, and we provide technical assistance to pilots, airport operators, local government, and anyone else who would like some information or assistance on aviation. With that, I would like to skip to page 5 in your handout. This is getting right to the mic. the table at the top of the page shows the our revenues. We are 100% dedicated funds. All of our revenues come from the aviation agency. So we show here licensing and registration, that's of airports and pilots and aircraft, aviation fuel taxes. Federal funds, those are grants that we get from the Federal Aviation Administration for construction and for planning on our airports. I do want to point out that that money does not include our major construction projects that we get federal grants from on our airport, because that money is included in the capital construction budget. I did also want to point out the beginning balance, how that has increased. That's something important to us since we are a dedicated fund. There was a problem in the past, I believe it was in 91, that the division ran out of limitations, and so we had to close our doors and basically cease business for a couple of weeks. Luckily, it was in June, and so a new budget year was just getting ready to start, but we ran out of limitation and there was nothing left to go to. So we have set a goal of maintaining about $1 million cash balance, and so you can see that we've met that goal now, and that's because if there are any emergencies, we have nowhere else to go. So this is our rainy day fund. At the bottom of this table, you see the transfer out. There are some expenditures that we have that don't show as expenditures. They get transferred out of the revenue, and that's what that is. And the bottom of the page highlights what those are. That's our central services assessment to ODOT, and then our share, our matching funds to match the federal grants that we get on capital construction, and then our money that we have budgeted for capital improvements on our airport. Okay, I'll turn the page and look at our expenditure side of the budget.
Now, what are you on now? You're on the budget?
I'm on, page 6, budget, and this is actually the expenditure side. You can see our programs there. I want to highlight here the first listed program, Statewide Services and Infantry's Operations. The reason for the big increase in there is that's where we have budgeted our House Bill 2199, which is a proposed increase in our aviation fuel taxes. That program, that increase in funds would be dedicated entirely to a statewide pavement maintenance program, where we would maintain the pavement at airports, not just state-owned, but airports across the state. There is currently no general source for those airports to go to, and the other side to that is most of the airports in the state were built World War II era, and so they're now 50-year-old pavements that have gotten by without a need for a lot of pavement since that time, and right now all the bills are coming due. So that's an important program to us, and that's what that big increase that you see in that line comes from.
Yes, Senator Kuchin.
Thank you. When a private airport, when a plane lands at a private airport, is there some kind of fee that they charge that plane for landing? Is there any way that an airport could receive revenues in some way to repave their own runways?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Cusab. Normally, airports of that size don't charge a landing fee, so it's not when the plane lands, but there are a variety of ways that they recoup that, either through a fuel flowage fee, which is like a local tax on fuel that they sell, or a percentage of revenue that comes from the business on the airport if you have your plane worked on, or the airport, depending on the ownership structure, usually get some money from the airplane tying down or hangaring. So there are sources of revenue.
Further questions?
Anticipating what I was asking. Because you're saying that some of these funds go to pay to not just state pavement, but other private.
Not just to state airport, but not to private airports, to public use airports, which means they're owned by states or cities or counties or ports. So they're publicly owned, public use.
Now, I've had the question from from, I want to call him Senator Thorne, but I guess he's the support of Portland now, in regards to tie downs and what have you, that the independent airports, Republic airports, are way too cheap. And of course, if there is a gas tax increase, the Port of Portland will be paying more of that than anybody else by far. And he says there needs to be some more systematic or more evenly based way of tie downs and those type of things. And have you increased those fees recently? Those type of things?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hammond, we're working on increasing those fees right now at the state-owned airports. I wouldn't be surprised if many of you have heard from some of your constituents in the areas of state-owned airports, because it's creating quite a stir. But yes, we're redoing our whole lease structure to look at what we charge for tie-downs and hangars and fuel flowage and other lease spaces and all of our fees. And one reason is because of the Port of Portland's concerns.
When will we have that information?
Chair Hannon, it will probably be late this fall that we're completed with our study on the state-owned airports, and we'll have all of these.
Mr. Chairman, I too have had some conversations with the head of the Port of Portland, the economic realities that the Port of Portland faces are much different than most of the state-owned airports. The one that faces similar is Aurora, and Kirk has done a great job working with Aeronautics, trying to make those the fees and charges in the area competitive. We have, I think, been fairly aggressive, as Anna said, on the lease side of things throughout our airports around the state, but the economic realities are that a hangar in Waldport doesn't go for the same thing it does at Aurora or Hillsborough or some of those areas. And so, but what we're trying to do is update it, and this is at his encouragement as well, but update to be market competitive and make sure we're getting a good return on the assets we have at our state-owned airports. And that takes a lot of work with the constituents. It also takes work with the local other airports in the area. And I think Anne's striking a nice balance, getting out there, being aggressive about it.
Great. Glad to hear that. Representative Starr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a little bit of a concern here. We've got these public use airports that we need to have payments worked on. They've been around for 10, 20, 30, 40 years. They don't probably get a whole heck of a lot of use, and not all of them. Some of them do, obviously. And you're saying the bills are coming due. It seems to me that we've known that these bills are going to be out there, and all of a sudden we're having a huge increase in our taxes that these folks are going to have to pay to pay for these bills that are coming due. It seems to me that there was a lack of foresight and planning, setting aside funds or whatever to pay for some of these capital improvements over time, and where it's tough for me to support a huge increase in a fee or a tax to pay for something that we should have been planning for all along.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Starr, the Aeronautics Division has come before the legislature, I believe, for the last three sessions asking for an increase in the gas tax, knowing that the Aeronautics tax FGAS, knowing that it was coming due, and I think they've done a pretty good job, you know, laying out the case. Some of those increases have been tied to other bills and other things, but this is a user fee system solely paid for by the users of the system, and so I think that a lot of the work that's been done with the constituency means they understand the tie. Now, there may be some other politics involved, but this is one where gas tax on the highway side doesn't get used in Arrow, nor do Arrow funds go anyplace else except into the...
I could follow up, Mr. Chair.
Yes,
I understand. I appreciate that response. The question I have is, why weren't we setting money aside? We're using all the money up, every budget cycle, knowing that we had these kinds of repairs that are going to come due, these kinds of capital improvements that are necessary. We didn't, was there no plan at all in the budget that has been passed to try to fund some of these issues?
Chairman Timms and Representative Starr, there hasn't been a way without getting any of this money, and that Director Klinikin has just talked about, to budget for that from as a state responsibility. Again, these airports are owned by cities, counties, ports, and the state-owned airports, and there is some joint responsibility. And what's happened to the local governments is with the limitations on some of their funds in the past few years, they haven't been able to invest the money into airport maintenance that they had previously. So there are some compounding factors bringing us to where we are today.
Mr. Chairman, I'm hoping some star might add. We have, over time, every biennium, there are one or two airports that do get their runways paved, taken care of, either through these fees or through federal fees. So we've been trying to nurture these along, given the funds. You'll notice that with the tax increase we're talking about, it actually doubles the bottom line almost in terms of the investment that's made. And we would be happy to provide for the record sort of the comparable fees in other states, which would show that our ab gas tax is fairly low compared to other states.
Okay, further questions? Okay, continue.
Okay, well, we were going through the budget, and that was the major line item change. Everything else is pretty much carrying across. We'll be maintaining the programs that we have in the past. The bottom of that page shows our POPs, which is deferred maintenance on our own building that we want to try to catch up on. Airport safety and airport improvements are some work, removing trees and some caving that we need to do on our own state-owned airports, and then the aviation fuel tax increase. And no FTE changes.
Okay. Questions? I guess that's it. I'm going to adjourn the meeting. We have a conference in 5 minutes. So,
Mr. Chairman, would you like to hear from the panel?
Pass? Well, why not? Good idea.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Linda Gilbert, Department of Administrative Services. The agency has done a good job of covering the basic budget. This is Governor's revised budget, which is $6.1 million. The revision, of course, was determining that the tax increase would be $1.9 million, and that's House Bill 2199.
Okay, thank you. Questions?
Mr. Chairman, I would also...
Easy, folks.
Can we get a tax report, Mr. Chair?
Pardon?
I just wanted to get a tax report. I love paper.
What do you got there? Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to submit for the record answers to questions also from, I believe, the April 6th and the April 9th. Hope I got that right.
Okay, so you have heard this bill, heard this before, the Aeronautics Division?
No. April 6th and 8th.
Okay, why don't the members think about it a little, and then they come back, have them come back just for a short, you know, I hate to see a budget, especially when I'm chair, go through this fast in 5 minutes or 10 minutes in the process, because I think this is an important budget, even though it doesn't have general funds.
Usually rely on Senator Lee's inquisitive nature to outline our discussion.
Well, then we're just adjourn the meeting and wait for Senator Lee.
And Senator Lim.